Well, good afternoon, everyone. It is now 1 p.m. I want to welcome all of you to the Los Alamos County Board of County Commissioners work session on this December 12, 2023. It is 1 p.m. Please rise for an invocation by Commissioner Tony Haas, followed by the Pledge of Allegiance by Commissioner Luis Lopez.
Dear God, we come before you today to say thank you for letting us see another day. We thank you for granting us the strength to win the battles of everyday life. Lord, we don't know everything we will face today. Guide us through every moment, walking in your will. Keep our family and friends free from disease and harm. All this we ask in your holy name. Amen.
Amen. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, gentlemen. Roll call, Mr. Dornica.
Commissioner Haas,
here.
Commissioner Luis Lopez,
I'm here.
Commissioner Felix Lopez.
I am here. Approval of the agenda. Do we have any changes to the agenda? The two items that we have is item 2A, handbook discussion, and 2B, parking. Mr. Dornica.
No changes, Commissioner.
Okay, any discussion? Otherwise, I'll entertain a motion to approve the agenda.
Move for approval of the agenda.
Second the motion.
Commissioner Luis Lopez?
Yes.
Commissioner Haas?
Yes.
Commissioner Felix Lopez?
Yes. Thank you. Thank you so much, all of you, for being here. Before we get into too many things, I want to make a couple of announcements. Congratulating once again our Los Alamos County Assessor, Jordi Amaro, Assessor of the Year. Congratulations to you, ma'am. And in a couple of days, we're going to be celebrating a retirement from Mr. Martinez. Thank you so much for your service. Thank you for all you've done for Los Alamos County, for the constituents. On behalf of this board and everyone from the county, congratulations and thank you. And we wish you the best on your next chapter, sir. And last, as we approach the holidays, I want to wish you all a wonderful Christmas holiday, safe with family and friends. And we appreciate what all of you and what all of us do on behalf of our constituents for Los Alamos County. So Merry Christmas to all of you. And now we'll get back to the business at hand. So we're going to be open up. Yeah, there's plenty of chairs up here. We're going to open up this discussion with the handbook discussion. So Mr. Dornicamp, council, anyone, please open up the conversation.
I will defer to council, but for those folks who have copies of it, this is the handbook that we're proposing to place in front of the board for their consideration and adoption to replace our current handbook. I believe it's been brought up with the hard work of Attorney Nelson and DHS Director Michael Aragon. Through their hard work, I believe it's been brought up to the standards with which it should be. Other than that, Commissioner, I really have no other comments. I gave my comments when we were going through this handbook on and off for the past, I don't know, 8, 9, 10 months, something like that.
And Council, before you respond, just so if anyone is interested in making comments, please come up to the podium because this is going to be what's going to be adopted for the operation of employee from you name it. It covers just about everything. And I have had the opportunity to read, highlight, and I have quite a few questions here that we need to go over. So if anyone here, this is a work session, and remember, no decision is going to be made today on this particular handbook. This is going to be a discussion that we need to have. And if you have any recommendations, please feel free to bring them to the table. So on that, Council, if you have a couple of comments, otherwise I do have a couple of questions in there.
Thank you, Commissioner. As Phil said, we've been working on this for several months now. It's
basically a complete overhaul. I don't believe our last handbook had had a real overhaul for quite a while. We also worked with HR, Paychex, who's the HR provider for the county right now, and they've reviewed it. They've also checked it with, we've had a lot of recent law changes as well that affected Colorado. This should be the most current version that affects, that incorporates all of those laws as well. For the purpose of today, I'll answer any questions I can. I can't give legal advice in the open meeting, so if it's a legal question, we'll have to address it at a different time. But any changes that can be made without making any legal changes is definitely something that we can consider. And then hopefully we will have at a meeting soon the final version for your approval and implementation.
Thank you. So Mr. Bellenkamp, have you distributed copies to every one of the employees countywide?
No, I have not. What it is sent it out via email, and anybody who had requested a copy soon got a copy. But no, I did not.
Okay, and this is going to be, before we make a final decision to this document, it'll be made available to every employee throughout the county, correct?
We can do that, yes, sir.
Thank you, sir. Thank you, appreciate that. So, you know, going through the process, once again, this is something that when you read rules, regulations, and employee handbooks, it's probably not the best, not the most exciting reading that you have, but certainly I want to open this up. You know, one of my first questions would be, Mr. Dorenkamp, on section 5.11, when we are talking about violations of standards of conduct, I mean, I'm going to be speaking pretty much at a higher level, but one of the comments that I have in here, and I want us, all of us, to agree on that this is the language that we want to adhere to and operate under. But on section 5.11, there is one of the points that I wanted to address here is failure to dress according to organizational policy. And it says, please refer to Appendix A. So my question in there, Mr. Dorenkamp, for purposes of making it accessible to all employees, I want to make sure that what is that dress policy? I could not, from my perspective, I want to make sure that this is transparent and that all of us are on the same page.
Commissioner, I believe within that article that you're talking about, it talks about clothes that have holes in it. And I'm shooting from the hip here because I don't have that right in front of me, but I believe there it talks about clothes that may have holes in them. As far as road and bridge, I know it. I don't know if it's addressed in here within our road and bridge policies, but the PPEs, as we call them, personal protection equipment, steel-toed boots, unless a doctor or other type of professional has agreed to that an employee should or should not be wearing those, or should be wearing those types of apparatuses, about where their clothes are.
If there's a failure to meet that requirement, what happens then? One or two verbal?
Commissioner, that's pretty much up to the supervisor of that employee. And I think that's pretty much how this handbook's laid out. It's kind of an independent disciplinary action. Conduct that may arise to a disciplinary action issue is how that's carried out is solely upon that supervisor, whether it's a verbal the first time or if the conduct is such or the violation is such that it elevates it to a higher, I guess I would call it, disciplinary action, or time off, or whatever the case may be, then that's going to be left up to the supervisor of that employee.
So within the onboarding process, the 90 days that any employee has to go through, I would imagine that there is explanatory opportunity for the employees to have questions, even on basically on any segment and section of this employee handbook.
There is, Commissioner, and I found another article, 6.11, about personal appearance that kind of addresses part of that. Mm-hmm. What's expected as far as clothing and attire of an employee. And I believe in a nutshell, it says you're expected to maintain personal hygiene habits that are generally acceptable in the community, including clean clothing, good grooming, and personal hygiene, and appropriate attire for the workplace and for the work being performed. This may include wearing uniforms, protective safety equipment, safety clothing and equipment depending upon the job. And then it does refer to Appendix A, the acceptable attire in the work environment.
I'm gonna have a couple more questions and I'll yield the floor back to anyone. So on section 6.4, computer security and copying of software, would it be proper to include in their intellectual property? If anyone were to store, i.e. a textbook that somebody has written in there and they download it to a county-owned computer, and upon termination and or resignation of that particular individual, that information is stored in a government, i.e. county-owned computer, would that be considered intellectual property, and would there be important to have that on the 6.4 computer security and a copying of a software section?
That would be a legal question, Commissioner, but my understanding of intellectual software is if I'm an employee, as an example, writes code for a governmental agency, and I'm writing code while I'm being paid by that agency, that code does not belong to me personally, even though I may have wrote that code. It belongs to the county, since I was employed by the county at the time that wrote that code. So to me, anything that is developed while that employee is being paid, that to me is what is intellectual property. If something's downloaded off the internet or off a personal computer onto a county computer, I'm not sure that would qualify as intellectual property. But again, that would be a legal question, in my opinion.
And our opinion is that we cannot receive legal advice at this particular point. So thank you so much. We'll write that question. Let me ask any elected official, have you had an opportunity, first of all, to go through the handbook? And do we have any questions at this time? I know Jody has at least two.
I'm assessor of the year.
If we could get a brief overview of the differences of our old personnel policy and this new personnel policy, because I don't even have my copy, I know, is probably 11 to 15 years old. That's it. I mean, because it's apples and oranges.
It's an entirely different policy. The only thing that we basically copied and moved into this was how everything was laid out with pay, leave, those types of things, because it was specific to the county.
Right.
Everything else, to some extent, for the most part,
is completely different. Is brand new. And so we are just having a work session today. We are adopting this sometime soon. So we still have time to critique and continue to look over.
Yep. This is not the session here today.
Right. And once again, as an elected official, I am going to ask this question. This is a guideline, but decisions and reprimanding are still up to that elected official to handle within office, correct?
That's what I read there.
Thank you.
Yes.
But as long as it's, if I may, Chair, yes, as long as within compliance with the FLSA,
right,
and all the other regulations. What's happened over the years, guys, is we inherited a handbook that was obsolete and outdated, hasn't been up to code in who knows how many years with what's out there, the federal regulations, the state regulations, and also our own adoptions. So that's what we're trying to attempt here. Not so much for the protection of the county government, but the protection of our employees and our staff. So that's the purpose of this today.
Thank you.
Mr. Martinez.
Well, most of you know I'm with the union and stuff like that. And then the contract, got to kind of watch because this is what we adopted. You guys signed off on it a little bit. So there's a lot of things that I just got the new one. So I'm going to have time to go through that and make sure it kind of corresponds with what the contract states also, because I know there's a lot of different things here and there and things that are going to throw a little bit off, but don't forget, this is what we agreed upon. And I understand, sure, you want to try to separate people and all this other stuff and things like that. But
that's a really good point.
Well, that's like I said, and then whenever we, this is still good till 25. So, I mean, I just want to make sure that we're on the same page with stuff, and I don't want to.
And if I can address that for you, Jojo, there is going to be differences between the handbook and the contract. There is language in the handbook that specifically states if there is a difference, the union contract controls.
We will supersede, right?
Correct.
That's what I'm.
So we can't. I wrote like 40 some pages. We'd be at 100 if we tried to lay out every difference.
Right.
So that language means that if there's a conflict, we go to the contract.
Right.
Not the
handbook. Right. Because like I said, that's the first thing I go to, and I've had a lot of discussions with Phil and with Christy on some of the other issues and stuff like that. I just want to make sure that we make sure that there's no mistakes and stuff like that. If you're going to go after something, go after the right thing.
Well, in essence as well, Joel, that it could actually deem beneficial for the union to acquire more union workers because of that.
Right.
And that's up to the individual employee.
That's exactly.
Now that we're an open shop union.
Right.
But, you know, just in clear and present in front of us is exactly that.
Right.
So that's where we'll probably assist the union in attaining
more individual stuff, right? I just want to make sure. But like I said, I'd like to go through the new one that you guys brought up and stuff, and then this way I can make sure everything is kosher.
Thank you.
No. Thank you.
Yes.
No. Just a question, Jeff, I'm not sure. So we have the old handbook that's 2012, and over the years there's been a lot of resolutions amending that. Do those resolutions stand for?
When this is adopted, the resolution will clearly state that anything that's been done in the past is gone, except for the contract, and this takes over. No resolutions will stay in effect.
If there was a lot of MOUs that we talked in our meetings about, they don't use it.
The MOUs, anything that relates to the union, be separate.
Yeah.
The handbook.
Okay. Yeah. I don't want the MOUs
to
be. Yeah. Bob and I don't know if you've received some of that percentage.
Well, and reiterating the point that Jody brings to us, this is the first of could be several conversations.
Right.
This is one of the things that before we say yes to anything, it has to reflect A, what the state has mandated through legislation the last few years. B, are we 100% in compliance with the federal government? So I see this document to be a living document. And making changes, perhaps on the anniversary of its adoption, every year, and as the changes come through the legislature, because I know the opportunity for us right now to mirror what other counties are doing. Every county pretty much is looking at is it time to, and rather than having so many more changes, let's start from a clean slate. Mr. Martinez, and then we'll go. But yeah, open communication. It's going to be an open and moving document. So anybody else that would like to make a comment on this? Yes, sir.
Hello, everyone. So
introduce yourself to the audience.
I'm Sean Rogan. I'm an admin clerk. So reading through this new handbook. It is the most vague thing I've ever read, ever. And I am a big fan of, like, I like to know what is expected of me, what is not expected of me. So this is very, like, wish-washy. Like, there's lots of points where it says lack of attendance for absences, but it doesn't say what is an over. So, like, for admin, it could be 2 days. For another department, it could be 7 days. But there's no, it's just, it is what it is. And it's just very vague. Another thing that is brought up in here, sorry, I've got a lot of notes in here, is it talks about full-time and part-time. And that full-time is at 32 hours and part-time is below 32 hours. And I believe in our current book, it's set at 30 hours, not 32.
This is the change. A lot of changes are to comply with current law.
Perfect. Okay. Let's see here. On travel expenses, it has that your telephone and fax is covered, laundry and dry cleaning is covered, and gratuities are included. And I know that in our current policy, that if you have a company credit card, gratuities are not included.
This is a completely different handbook.
Okay, I just want to make sure
if there are things in here that the commissioners don't want in here, that's why we're going through this part and they can communicate. And that's the other thing too, for anybody who's talking today or doesn't talk today, if there's a specific session you have a question on, you want to ask me a question about it, or you'd like a change made, you can email, call me, talk to me about that. If it's something that can be made, it's not going to violate something legal, I can put that in there and we can resend it out. We can talk about it with the commissioners as well if there's a specific section. And that's things that, a lot of this is also guidelines. This is what is sometimes required or sometimes what is the standard practice that we can or can't deviate from.
Okay. And then next is smoking in designated areas. Do we have designated areas established?
On the city property across the street.
Perfect.
Sorry, guys. I said the city.
But I mean, that is
an ex-smoker here. That's why.
Is,
yeah. So you know, on your some of your points in all sincerity, and I think a lot of that will be in your individual job description, and then that will fall under your direct supervisor to make that determination. This is more of a broad.
It is broad, right. But I'm just saying, as an employee, if you know, I'm sorry, Jody, you're the first one. If I'm working in Jody's office, is Jody's office policy going to be different than Carrie's office policy?
You know, and I think that's where it goes down to job description and something that's written in the job description that could probably make that determination different than the overall handbook. Again, that by a legal question, but I would imagine so that what the Road and Bridge is doing is completely different than what you're doing in admin, which is completely different than the assessor in the treasurer's office and so forth regarding, say we're in winter season right now, we got snow plows going out, and you take 2 weeks off and you had no time coming. Who knows what their supervisor might do versus something in your position here in the courthouse. So I think everything would be drafted according to what the job description is. And then this is basically covers and envelops the entire county.
Perfect. And then do we have an appendix A for that? Because we do have the appendix about overtime and that, but we do not have the dress code one included in here.
As Commissioner Lopez was discussing, it is not attached to this. It is drafted, it is available, and it will be sent out ASAP.
Sorry, I'll just go through just. Well, I'll let some pass while I go back to.
I have one kind of on what Sean's talking about, the meals per diem, how many mileage per diem, and the masking count. I didn't see that
until. So it's something that's going to flex. It's going to change every year, possibly based on what the state rates are. So in the handbook, it references to what the current status is, and that's something that will be addressed by the board. We will have a resolution every year that says these are the standard rates for per diem for meals and mileage. That, and if you put it in the handbook, we'd be modifying the handbook every year to adjust to that.
Yeah, the state controller's office, through the fiscal rules, Chapter 5, every year will issue the new domestic and international per diem applicable to state employees. And I believe that's been kind of the true north that we follow. And we'll keep an eye on that too. So thank you.
I'd like to ask a question. I'm going to go back to the laundry and the gratuity. I was always remember that this is tax dollar public money that we're spending. And I kind of wonder if this really qualifies as to be reimbursed. So this is something to think about. I just wanted to bring that up in the text.
And again,
tax dollar money.
This is part of
where I don't think it's up to us to the county to pay for it yet. But this is just my opinion.
Part of the conversation that we're having. Absolutely, really good point.
From the individual that scrutinizes every penny, guys.
Every penny. Yes. So. Great, great points. One of my questions also, the section 7.4 talks about upon termination, 280 hours of PTO to be paid. And then of course I went back and I looked at some of the rules from the state and the 280 hours, that would be a question. Is that something that we have had forever? Okay.
That's our cap.
Okay.
In the past it was vacation, but now it's going to be called PTO annually.
Very good.
Yeah, it's vacation.
Very good. And then one clarification I wanted to also ask. In 7.6, emergency volunteer services, time off. So, and clearly the policy action says that if anybody's going to be taking any time off for the purposes of a volunteer fire department, up to how many days? And then I think, as Sean mentioned, how do we get additional days to that individual if the first 25 days were not sufficient? And then my last question would be, is that there is no clarity in here. Is that paid or unpaid time off?
Unpaid.
Yeah.
The additional days?
The additional days.
Unpaid or not?
Would be the same. Okay.
Stand before on that issue there is new fires and stuff. The town always paid these guys to do the work with the service. As far as I'm concerned, all the speed of the deal, that your job that you would have to pay for that man grandpa that you were attached.
Yeah, I believe that was as part of his services within the Holy Fire Department. I'm shooting from the hip again here, that if he would have otherwise been making those wages while working during road bridge time, 8 to 5 or whatever time, or 8 to 3:30, whatever time frame was, that he was eligible for those same wages, even though he was actually firefighting. And I don't know if that statute is still in existence or not. But
how long ago was that, Joe?
Oh, it's been quite a while. We haven't had anybody that had fires.
Typically.
Before we walk over and then serve. But if it's real big fire and stuff, that's when they ask the people to stay and then they're gone. That's our position there.
Typically, if a road bridge employee responds to a fire, it's because they are responding to that fire as a road and bridge employee, not as a volunteer firefighter. But there was the one exception, and it was brought to our attention at that time in 2008, 2009. It was a while back.
Well, as far as I know, the boss that they have to stay with that, do their job to help to make sure that the fire gets contained or whatever you need. Whoever you work for is responsible for your pay.
And that probably,
just 40 hours.
And it probably still could be through emergency management, had baptized by fire for that over the years. So how it works is if the state assumes a fire, we bill the state for that. So yeah, I'm sure it's still in place, Joe, but it's just a matter of how we do it internally to make sure that employee gets paid. I would assume. When we submit the bill to the state of Colorado, that needs to be considered and looked at if we have any volunteer firefighters that are offset. Okay. That makes sense.
Yeah.
Because we've done that through the health department during the spring fire 7 years ago, 6 years ago. So.
And it was right that he had went
to
take time.
That was during the spring fire. So if we bill it correctly, I think we can get that accomplished, Phil. But I don't know if it's in statute or if it isn't anymore because of the way the fire have changed. And since 7 years ago, the state wouldn't take over a fire in Los Angeles County until we met a super high threshold of criteria. Now that criteria is lower, and it's a lot easier for them to take over and assume the fire, which brings that state dollars and then the necessary federal dollars to come up offset that expenditure. So. There's just a way we track it probably in the future, but that's something that's a good point to look at.
Mr. Richards.
Just a
side note on that. At most fires, let's pick a fire, that's the most thing to worry about. The first 14 days are pretty much from our home. And then after that, we can get the reimbursement either from a state or federal government. So usually the first 14 days we're on our own.
Yeah, like you mentioned in the comments, it was like 20 some days or plus
right.
where this individual was years ago. So yeah. Yeah. Well, hopefully we don't have any.
Well, this is a great conversation. The reason being why we need to have this before we put any signatures on any line. So let me ask one more time. Anybody else would like to make a comment? And you're going to receive a copy or request a copy, but I think we are going to make that available to all of you of the current version that we have. So continue to work with your direct elected officer, supervisor, to bring any comments. And just remember, the decision is not going to be made preemptively. We will continue. If we need to have another conversation, we certainly will. Sir?
If I can add to what Commissioner Luis Lopez had mentioned earlier about the union perhaps gaining employees, I think where a commission was going with that is if you're not an employee, if you're not a member of the union, my understanding is that once this handbook is adopted, that those employees who are not union members will be subjected to the Fair Labor Standard Act rather than the union contract. And there are some differences in that contract versus what FSLA dictates. As an example, if there's a holiday that falls within a work week, currently that holiday within a contract is considered as no work. So once you hit 32 hours of actual work time plus the 8 hours of a holiday, you're entitled to overtime. Where the FSLA, correct me if I'm wrong, I know you can't give legal advice at this point, but the FSLA, in essence, you would have to work 40 hours. You actually have to be at work for 40 hours, and then the 8 hours of the holiday would be added on top of that 40 hours. So in essence, counting the holiday, there would have to be a total of 48 hours before you start receiving overtime. So that's one of the significant differences, in my opinion, between the contract and the FSLA. So keep that in mind. Once this is adopted, this handbook's adopted, that will be one of the changes that will be noticed.
Hey, anyone else?
I got a question on that. So your foreman aren't union members. So if they were the holiday, I think.
No, not that they won't. My comment is not if they work the holiday.
Yeah.
If they don't have 40 hours of actual work time, then they won't be receiving overtime until they don't receive. They won't be receiving overtime until they do actually have 40 hours worth of work time. Now, 40 hours worth of work time does not include the 8 hour holiday or the 10 hour holiday, depending on what you're
doing.
If it's a contract, that's correct.
Right. And then as far as the clothing, I mean, I've got my pants are torn a little bit now too, but I'm up middle, just jackrabbits and cows. It really matters if my pants are.
Appendix A will be forthcoming.
I mean, us Golden Bridge guys, we're not only going to be neatly dressed, because we're out there with cows and jackrabbits. And we're out there doing something that we can tear something at any time.
I concede your point, Joe.
It kind of proves the point what Sean brought up. This is vague for a reason, because every department head will be able to have that scrutiny. Cowboy hats and coveralls probably wouldn't fly in Jody's office and vice versa. And muck boots.
And any and all comments, again, please keep send them forward. Anybody else in the audience?
If anybody has any questions about the contract, feel free to call me. If you have a problem with something,
very good.
And just a closing comment. I'd like to thank Michael and Pam and our staff were going through this, reviewing it, Phil, Christy, Paula, and Seth, and all you guys. Basically, this is, like I said earlier, to get this revision updated, or of this handbook updated and brought out for the protection of our employees, not for the counties. This is for you. So whatever input you have once you review this, please get that feedback back to Pam or Mr. Dornenkamp, Mr. Aragon, or your supervisor or your elected official, and Kenny as well. Whoever is your position there, Brandy at Roden Bridge, and get your input heard. Because if not, this is going to get signed and put into place, and we need your input if you have any concerns or questions how to fine-tune it at this point. So thank you all for your dedication to Los Angeles County and for all your years of service. And JoJo, congratulations every time. Oh, yeah.
Absolutely. Yep. Yep. So hearing all the comments on this, and again, unless your question absolutely, those are going to be the communications and conversations that need to be had. And it's all about communication. I mean, and a lot of common sense in this whole process. This is not going to be a one-sided thing. So from that perspective, we want to thank you all for being here. And so if I don't have any other comments, this portion of this meeting, we're going to close. We're going to go to the next item that we have listed. So thank you all. Merry Christmas, and we'll see you in a couple of days at the county fairgrounds, sir.
Oh, yeah.
All right. The second item on this agenda, 2A, is going to be parking. Parking is becoming a commodity word.
Yeah.
Mr. Richards?
Mr. Chairman, commissioners, board members, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, sir.
As your emergency manager, I shouldn't suck in this wrong word, but I get... part of my duties, cover the whole span of the community. For example, if there's a festival or something, I still do an overview. I call the state Homeland Security, and they provide a report on how things are done. We just recently got a $38,000 grant for IT updates, 100% grant from Homeland Security. So my job just kind of jogs in and out of here. Now, today, the sheriff asked me to come and and unfortunately, living so long, I have experience in other things. So he wanted me to put my building official hat on and kind of bring the subject up, the parking around the courthouse here in the DHS offices. I'm sure you guys had a conversation about this before, but I wanted to try and do that again. I put a little presentation together. Do you guys want a hard copy? I do have a hard copy if you want. Thank you, Phil, for getting it up. Let's go to the first slide. We're going to talk today about ADA parking and security at the courthouse. I've been working with the sheriff on a lot of issues here in the courthouse that dabble in my area of expertise, as far as getting the building up to code, trying to get signage, appropriate signage, having all the updates on fire drills and things like that. And parking is one of the issues that has come up as a sore spot. So the sheriff asked me to bring it up, and I am not the ADA compliance officer. I'm not trying to be the compliance officer, but I really think this item needs to get some resolution to it one way or the other. Because from a security standpoint, everybody in this building, whether elected official or staff member, should feel secure coming to work. But from the ADA side, every person who comes up here who has a handicap or limitation of some kind should have a comfortable way to get in and out of the building. My personal experience, my oldest daughter got rheumatoid arthritis when she was 7, and she was hospitalized. She's had 4 hip replacements, 3 knee replacements. So it's a sensitive step for me to have ADA compliance. So it's real important. I ask Bob Just from the City of Trinidad to be here today, just if you had any questions on what the city's attitude towards it. Because all the parking we have along Maple and Chestnut do not have any ADA compliance at all. So we have to figure out another way. Some of the parking on First Street is fine on First Street, but now you got to work, hoof yourself up to the door. So there's all these compliances. So in the first slide, I want to show you is just an idea of what ADA parking looks like. You know, you're all familiar with that. Just want to do it. Next slide is basically the footprint of the courthouse, and you see the limitations. There's stairs everywhere, and we just have that one ingress and egress basically on the front, on the west side, and we have one on the east side in the courtyard area. The next slide, just some pictures showing the way things are as we speak. My suggestion, and we'll just run this through and part of the conversation, was in this slide, for example, you'll see the retaining wall on the left-hand side of the picture. If we took that retaining wall and went 20 feet or so into the park and created parking, we'd have parking all along the south side of the building here, and that would satisfy the needs of the courthouse and DHS, because the DHS, the director talked to me about, they're having issues too, because they have a hard time finding handicap parking on Chestnut. If for our side, a simple would be about 65 feet of that wall would have to go back. That would provide 5 ADA compliant and with one van.
Just a comment on that, Mr. Richards. If I remember correctly, years ago, we looked into doing some renovations with the park, and we ran into a hiccup with the Historical Society. That park has a designation, or did, or something was an issue at the point in time. And this is my first year as a commissioner. I can't remember the details, but we'll have to definitely look into that to see if
I did do that. I sat down with the city. I sat with Bob, and we had a couple of conversations about the building itself. Here is historical or hysterical, depending on your perspective. The park is not. So the city would be behind providing ADA parking and making that move and chewing up some of that real estate in the park area. Does that help?
Yeah, that's with the historic district.
I just went with the city now. I didn't mean the
yeah, so there was a designation for the historic district, and any renovations and all the painting and all that stuff that have to be.
That's with buildings. Yeah.
Yeah, so
the caveat is it's not a building.
So would that also have to go before that Historical Society or that organization to get?
Yeah, I can let Mr. Just address that. Probably be best. Yeah. Maybe you want to do that now,
please,
Bob.
While we're on that slide,
sure.
Because that could help alleviate a lot of stuff if that was to be had the money to do so.
Good afternoon, Commissioners, Phil, sure. Ladies. Sure. That park is private. So I can't answer if it's part of the historical. I don't anticipate that it is. My understanding of historical preservation is buildings. So moving a retaining wall to gain you ADA parking, in my opinion, wouldn't constitute jeopardizing historical. But again, that's privately owned. It's not, you'd probably have to check with somebody from the preservation board, but I doubt if that park is.
Okay. So drainage systems that run underneath or in that park, are there any, and do we know of?
That's a good question. We found lines in Chestnut that we didn't think were there. I mean, there were two side-by-side lines running right up the middle of the street. Nothing would surprise me. You have a structure that's 100 plus years old, infrastructure as old, so.
Yeah, I'm putting the dollar cap on to see what,
Yeah. I wouldn't anticipate any, but who knows until you put a machine in there. But what Mr. Richards is proposing, the same thing I talked about, Phil, when your state person came down, that would be ideal. I mean, it's right adjacent to both sides, the DHS and this side. It's fairly flat. I wear many hats at the city, one being the ADA coordinator. And that's the reason there's no way possible that we can get ADA spots on Maple or Chestnut, because we got a running street grade of 10%. we were able to facilitate that on First Street. We basically, is there four that we have now? Nate, we have four ADA spots on First Street. We're going to have two more in the next block when we go to, down to Walnut on this end for veterans and the Blue Mansion back of house. But it was the only area that we could do off with what we call on-street ADA parking. Generally, ADA parking has to be off-street, like what we provide in that smoking area over there for PD. they have an area that's ADA compliant down on that lower end. But this would be ideal. It's fairly flat when you go from the east side to the west side along that, we call it an alley/drive. You would probably have to, you know, move some material, reestablish a retaining wall, and then you could generate. It's up to you. Yeah.
Okay.
The recommendation would be to take it all the way across, but that's entirely what you guys want to spend.
So would that have to go before the city planning and zoning since it's just by a private property or no?
No, it wouldn't have to go in front of Sony. You'd have to get a permit, but that's.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's private property. So
my question would be to Mr. Dorenkamp. I'm trying to. How much of that cost is linear foot to re establish that retaining wall with that certain architecture? Okay, you have that.
And we have numbers, but we did put a few retaining walls on the other side of the street. So with current numbers, anyway.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Justice.
You bet.
I
was just going to ask a question.
Yeah.
Since our courthouse is a historical building, is our park historic?
It is not. Yeah, that was the question I went with Bob and the city, the clerk recorder. We talked to the clerk. When we talked on the phone, I think it was the clerk we talked to about.
The city clerk.
The state, yeah, to see if that. And that was it. We considered that was private property. It was the end of the conversation was that was a private piece of land that we could use. Okay. I think you're going to have more trouble. What are we going to do about the beautiful trees? So my calculations are around it. And please excuse my maybe pushiness about this. I was a building official in Arapahoe County, and I intersected with Denver, Centennial, Littleton. And this was, we had plenty of buildings that were built in the 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s. That we had, this was an ongoing problem. It never went down. So I do have some experience in this. So that's why I'm bringing you the problem, but I'm trying to bring you a solution. It may not be the solution, but I'm trying to bring you a solution that we can at least move towards, or I'll go sit down and be quiet.
Phase five.
Question, if I may, where's the 65 feet? Where does that start from?
I measured 20 feet basically from the end of the build to save those trees, and went 65 feet further and figured go in there. Same thing on the
other. Where's the 65 feet coming 20 to go 65? Where does that terminate?
It comes close to the stairs.
The steps,
that steps that are there now.
The steps that go back to the
right.
On this side, on that side.
That side.
So we would take the steps out.
Yeah, probably. So we'd have to redo the steps. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, and then you're going to have, then there would be a dog leg in that retaining.
Correct. We would basically separate everything on this side would be for the courthouse, everything on that side for DHS, and the offset kind of sets those parameters.
So if you change the stairs, do we have to now, since it's already grandfathered in non-ADA, or do we have to now make those ADA compliant?
Have access from the second.
Okay.
So as long as you have an access in, I think you're right. But that would be for the city to approve our plans. We'd have to hire an engineer
or spend more money.
Architect. Yeah, to draw this up and then get corroboration from the city to make sure everything is copacetic. But I don't think that's a problem. Worst case scenario, you'd have to build a ramp.
Right.
Instead of the stairs, just build a ramp. So
it will line up with the current sidewalk though. Sure. If we move that over, we'd have to adjust the sidewalk, right? Because
it's not 20 feet.
Commissioners, and got a picture up on the screen. Sorry, Margie, I just jolted.
Added to my.
The early part of this year, we brought this in front of the board. Perhaps we look at taking out this piece of the park, and that would give us enough room, I believe it was for two ADA parking spaces, the issue we ran into, though, if we went back here 20 feet, we'd end up having a dog leg den at this point over there by DHS. And, and our thoughts were at the time here just to make this more of a straight retaining wall to come back this direction, because we didn't want to be taking out any of the sidewalk here. That was part of the problem. And then I can't remember, there was some other issue. It seems like that doesn't come to my thought process here as to why we didn't carry this on further. But I think it was because we don't want to take out the sidewalk. But this would provide two additional ADA parking spots here, in addition to what we have proposed in the courtyard. But we'll go back to that.
Yeah, and I think what you have to think about is, in the long run, if once we do this, I mean, it's done out of you and I, so that, you know, it'll be done for, you know, future generations. So, and it'll solve an immediate problem to do that. And we can make it as big or as small as we need to be. But I still haven't had a head count. I've asked the fire department to work with them to get an occupancy of the courthouse. So that dictates how many community spaces you need. And you need about one for every 25. You need airplane for six. You need van compliance. And the reason you need to go deep into my van, I have an old van, and it's almost 20 feet long. It's 19 feet long. So you need a nice deep parking area. You can't just, make it 16 feet like some of the parking lots you go when you go shopping. It has to be deep and wide so people can make the turns in and out. Same thing on the DHS side. I figured about 76 feet of that wall, we'd have six ADA compliant parking spaces with one van compliant space on each side. Let's see. And there's the stairs we were talking about. Next slide. Basically, you just, depending on where the ADA parking, the stairs could stay or may have been taken out. I think Bill's right. We moved everything back to, but you're eating up more of the park, so that you don't want to, we try to make it as community friendly as possible. And the next slide is the infamous courtyard. Let's go to the next slide, Phil. I think everybody knows what the courtyard looks like. There's a little layout it's too small for what we're trying to do. To get ADA compliance in there, to get the DA in there, to get the judges in there, to get everybody in there that they feel secure and can work, it's just too tight. We're back to the philosophy of stuffing 5 pounds in 2 pounds. So we need that, in my opinion. That area should just be for secure areas, the sheriff's department, judges, and the ADA. You could probably fit one ADA compliant parking space in there. But if we ever had a problem there from an emergency management standpoint, I can't get an ambulance in there. I can't, it's really hard. It makes everything an obstacle course. So to me, it would be a lot easier to make just that area just designated for a secure area. Does that make sense?
Secure for who?
For the sheriff's office, bringing prisoners in and out,
transport
for transporting, for the judges, for the DA, and those kind of people that have security. I can't control what they do off campus, but on campus, I feel that we have a responsibility to, give them the amount of security they think they need, plus the convenience of the sheriff bringing inmates in and out in a convenient manner, without tripping over things and trying to drag them up downstairs, things like that. So that's what this little layout was. I'll kind of show you that. The next one was basically.
Let me back you up a little bit here.
Sure.
So based on the layout that we've been working on, and what you just told us now, this wouldn't be compliant for ADA, the space we have in here for vans and for.
It's pretty tight. You have a 20-foot van you're going in there. Now you have to back that sucker out. You don't have turning radiuses. You don't have, somebody's going to pick that up and be banging into everybody back in there. Then you're going to have the sheriff back there trying to deliver prisoners. You're going to have the judge or the DA back there moving in and out. Small economy car, maybe we'd be okay.
So it almost seems like it'd be just best left vacant and only used for transports and for emergencies.
Well, that too. But if security is an issue with the elected officials, that that would be a perfect place to do it.
Phil, I'm thinking about the dollars, and you started to bring it up. 76 feet on that side, 65 feet on this side. You probably have a pretty good idea how much per square foot this retaining wall to make it look like the other one what that was going to be. And we've already applied for the EIF grant for the improvements to this. So that would be additional.
Right.
We would need to go back. We would need to go back to EIF. Let me rephrase this. My recommendation would be to change our grant application commissioner and tell him no, we're no longer going to put ADA over here in the courtyard. So forget that grant. We'll apply sometime in the future, I guess. And again, I don't have the data right in front of me, but it seems like this retaining wall that was recently constructed was close to, I want to say close to $1,000 an annual foot. Christy, correct me if I'm wrong, because it costs us $370 to come to 300 feet or whatever it was from the Chestnut entrance to Maple entrance. So it's going to run close to, I'm going to guess, $1,000 a foot. Plus, we're going to end up, in my opinion, we should end up concrete in the alley, because the folks in the chairs and wheelchairs have told us numerous times that they would prefer to go longer distances on a smooth surface and shorter distances over a rough surface like we have with the bricks. So that was our reason for changing the layout of the courtyard and concrete, applying for a grant to concrete the whole thing. And in addition to that, the sliding doors in front. So yeah, it's if we're going to change the makeup of our parking, our conceptual parking, then we need, in my opinion, to decide rather quickly so we can make adjustments on our grant applications.
And I bring this just up in the course of conversations we're doing. I'm not trying to stir trouble up here.
No, this is really appreciated. But, yeah, you know, my thing, you know, my comment is going to be, we have been able to coexist and operate for the last however long. And I know the rules and regulations may, when it comes to, we don't, probably don't have enough space, Mr. Richards, for the van that you're speaking of. But on the other hand, the grant that we have applied takes in consideration even some of the, on the northeast part of the courtyard, to actually take where we currently we have kind of a storage unit to actually create one or two parking spaces in there. Now, we delivered the grant, and we have been really successful in the last, yours truly with all respect, is if we pull that back now, even if we had the grant, this project that you're proposing, by the way, Jake, doing all the research, we wouldn't see fruition on this project for minimum probably of a year.
And a deficit of $200,000 from the new rate, which happened at the special session. We just have a lot of.
Well, in my thinking, it would
I'm
be.
I'm in the middle of budget right now.
It would be.
Direction where I'm going to go with this now.
So here's my thoughts.
But go. Well, this would be an addition to, I think, whatever you're doing. We don't have to stop, because for the courtyard, if the bricks are more than a quarter inch out of tolerance, you're not ADA compliant. Somebody can sue you for, I can't get in because of this. So we want to avoid all that legality and try to get moving forward. As long as we're moving forward, we're doing so. Each parking spot, in my humble opinion, I haven't been estimated construction for a while, but I would say you're looking at $15,000 of parking space to get that place and get it done. We have to watch, the further we go back, retaining wall, it makes the retaining wall higher. So now we have to put a railing up. So you keep adding cost. That's why I was trying to keep it minimal, just move what we have to, not what we need to. We can use the dry stacking like the city used. It's attractive, it's not ugly. It won't be the same as what's out there, but we can make a cutoff and we can, you know, make that happen. So, you know, be practical with it if we can. But we want you to keep it as simple as we can.
So, if I may, Chair, as a county commissioner, we have to oversee all funding.
Yes, sir.
And judicial responsibility for our residents of this county. And the statutes are very clear what we have to abide by for ADA compliance. I think we've exhausted this enough. These folks that are in a position of wheelchair don't have any other options. That's why the ADA protections are there. And if Mr. Hamer was alive today, he'd be in here screaming and yelling us for even having conceptual parking to allow judges, lawyers, and our sheriff's deputies in there. I definitely see the sheriff deputies need for the transport of the inmates. I'm sure there's plenty of statutes that council can probably give us for protection of them for transportation to and from court. So here we are analyzing possible spending another $250,000 minimum at what expense and why. There's no statutes that say we have to provide safety for our district attorney, judges, lawyers, county commissioners, elected officials, or otherwise. But there is statutes that say we have to comply for those that are ADA compliant, that have half a lung missing or in a wheelchair.
Yes.
Those folks, unfortunately, don't have a choice. The rest of us do. And that's where I'm at with this. I think the plan that Mr. Dorenkamp has brought forward to us with the two sheriff's office or and or judges parking in the front where this Connex is at down below the storage shed. We also want to make sure we have access for our maintenance department to have access to that side door for when they need to get tools in and out. And then have the three van accessible parking at this time. Now, in the future, if we want to move forward as a board and we have more funding mechanisms available to us and the legislature's changed and this HH overhaul goes away, I definitely would be 100% with you in removal of that wall and adding to that. But we're not at that point yet. That could be a great groundbreaker for the future. But we're talking the next month or two or 3 months of getting this accomplished or construction season coming in the spring for the concrete for this van accessibility for the folks in the wheelchair. And again, those who are in the wheelchair do not have an option. The rest of us do. And I think we owe it to them to be, as a county commissioner, to make sure that we look after those that don't have a voice, can't be heard for themselves.
And I agree wholeheartedly, Commissioner, because that courtyard is not really a functional. It looks pretty on paper, but it really does work. And you're going to have more issues, honestly, with that personal opinion. Okay, from experience, I've been doing this a long time. Commissioner, sorry.
If I may add too, I sit on the EIF board and I watch when they pull applications away, and funding is going to be limited. After this HH, 25 million, which is a whole round, was swept from our being able to do two rounds a year. We're only going to be able to do one round now this year. So funding, in my opinion, is going to be scarce because of what we're experiencing right now. I can see it happening. When we have to eliminate a whole round of 25 million, I wouldn't pull that because I'm afraid it's going to be very.
Right, I would keep going. Absolutely.
Yeah, I think it's going to be very. What's the word? There's going to be a lot of competition for the money.
But so having no only reason I mentioned about pulling it is because if we're not going to have that ADA parking in the courtyard, frankly, that's the way I've submitted the grant. This will be ADA parking. And I think legally I've got our proposal up on the monitors. Our proposal has three van parking areas. Legally, we're not required to have that. We don't have to have that. But in the not too distant past, I bumped into an individual here in town, parked out here in the courtyard, almost in tears, because she could not find fitting place to so I don't want to start banging on furniture, but I am, after seeing the tears almost coming out of her eyes, I am more in tune with what Commissioner Lopez, Commissioner Cass are saying, that these folks, and I know firsthand knowledge of you, these folks have the choice. We need to do all we can to make sure that when they want to access either the DHS building or the courthouse, they can access it across a smooth surface and not have to fight any other people parking in their areas, parking in their spots, et cetera. That being said, as Commissioner Lopez mentioned, we have these two spots here that we lined out for judges and or law enforcement, and we can, because I made this spot here 8 feet wide, a typical parking, not a van parking, but we could also convert that into a either a judge and or law enforcement parking spot. That would give us three in the courtyard for the judges and law enforcement. And I know you mentioned about this being tight in here. It would be tight, except that we'd be moving these dumpsters, putting them back over here, where we would take this arc out of the park and make it a 90-degree corner, put those dumpsters over here, which would open this up, and I don't know, my mask on the width of my head, but I'm thinking that's around 16, 17 feet wide. That would give a van or an ambulance or anybody else, I think, plenty of room to access the courtyard if there was an issue back then.
Well, again, I'm just bringing this up. So I
know, and you know what, your research, once again, this is part of from my perspective, is we have a project, we have a planning place, and having been there we met with Dola. In fact, we had a conversation after the last presentation that we had, and it was reminded of us. Go write one or two grants, which, by the way, we have already pretty much in front of us. And simply because of what Commissioner Tony has mentioned, there is going to be a reduction of availability of funds, and that's the reason we went forth. And I think, as you said, and I want to quote you here, is that this would be in addition to what we already are doing.
Yeah.
So I think the chapter that we are going through the process, and I'm going to invite anyone else, Judge McKesson, or you bet, Mr. Kramer, we have one of that opportunity to actually go through the process. Somehow, to me, we have been able to accommodate and survive, right? But now, really, we have this, the ADA, anytime when you enter into a renovation, you got to bring it up to compliance. I've heard that from Mr. Just. I was at the college for many years. Well, Felix, be careful, because if we do this here, now you've got to be compliant with. And so we have to, and that's what we're doing. So thank you so much for the research.
Thank you for your attention.
And commissioners, also, if we do in the future decide to do something here at the park and on the in the alley, then it would be my recommendation at that time, we'd end up having to concrete the entire alley. And if we're looking at the width of the alley now, which I think is around 20 feet, we're going back another 20 feet, we're looking at a 4-foot wide width of the concrete slab, the length of the courthouse, which I'm going to guess is 250, 300 feet long. So it's going to be a huge investment. And it's going to have all that tore up one time while construction is underway. So it's going to be an expensive project. And not to say that maybe in the future we don't do that and change all the courtyard parking back to however we want to do it at that time. That would be my suggestion, I guess, if we're needing three parking areas outside of the van parking in the courtyard, then go ahead and convert this if we want to a judge or a law enforcement. And I'm not sure why law enforcement, in fact, could pull into this spot temporarily to unload prisoners. And once the prisoners are unloaded, I shouldn't call them prisoners, but the people who are attending the courtrooms, once they're unloaded and inside the courthouse secure, that the sheriff's deputies then pull out of these ADA parking spaces and actually park back over here. I believe, you know, bring the city's conceptual.
We have deputy in our presence. Would you like to respond to that?
Yeah, it's just been practical. We had to stay with the inmates. We had to take them out of court. We couldn't bring them up to court with them, come down with our car. And sometimes it takes multiple cars to transport inmates to court. We only have cars that move two people, three people we stuck in. But we need, I would say, we need two spaces to do it safely for the inmates and us.
Very good. Thank you.
And if you look here, this, and I don't know how to get this thing to stand to the left, but this is actually north, the direction of the house. We got two ADA parking places down here on First Street. And this is the city's proposal. It's two ADA parking down here on First Street against Maple, and the same over here against Chestnut. And then there's three law enforcement parking areas here on Chestnut, where then they access off of Chestnut in the courthouse. So I guess what I was saying is unload the inmates and move the vehicles back over to the parking areas that are going to be designated for law enforcement.
Yeah, good night, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Commissioners, for the record, Bob Crimen, Court Executive. I do appreciate the county's willingness. We wanted three. Sometimes we have three judges that are in the courthouse at the same time. When I talked to Phil, Mr. Dornkamp, I said we'd like three, but we need two. And I appreciate that the plan accommodates two for judges. When I talked to Mr. Richards, he made a lot of sense. There's when you try to Jenga in all the cars and all the spaces, if it were full, there's just not a lot of room to turn around. You'd have to back out. There's a choke point there. It made a lot of sense to me. So his proposal, and I would count this as maybe a long-term plan, not a short-term plan, made a lot of sense because I think all you elected officials face certain dangers from the community. As our community changes, you guys probably get threats from the community. I raised somebody's taxes. I'm sure that people aren't happy about that. The dangers that judges, district attorneys face are slightly different. It's not hypothetical. Nationwide, there's been a lot of attacks on judges. Last week, we had a defendant charge a bench, squared up with one of our judges last week in this district. It's not hypothetical. It happens. So security is, of course, important. And I know you guys know that. ADA is important as well. Let's talk about money. I don't know if we'd be replacing this elevator down here had I not asked Phil. We'll sacrifice our courtroom project in favor of the ADA elevator. If we can only do one, let's do that. And so partnership with the county, $300,000 is coming to this county to replace that elevator. We are committed to ADA. I know our previous chief judge has ordered a ADA ramp in Walsenburg. We've historically been very cognizant of ADA. I'm the ADA coordinator for the 3rd Judicial District. ADA doesn't mean getting into the building. There's a lot of ADA, there's signage, there's elevators, there's ADA counters that should be compliant. If your commitment to ADA is they need access, then I think that when I went to speaking to Mr. Hamer, he came to me because I didn't have ADA counters. And I said, you're right, Steve. I came to the county before you guys, I think. And I said, I need some money to make an ADA counter. There was no money available. So I paid $3,000 out of my budget to make an ADA counter because it was important to me to have that accessibility. I look around the courthouse and I don't see ADA accessibility in the building. So if you want to take that ADA passion, then I would say put some money into it, make some ADA counters. But I know we're here to talk about parking. I just sent Mr. Dornkamp an email of the partnership that judicials had with the county over the years through underfunded. Do you remember $2.2 million or $2.3 million from judicial to this county for this building? We are committed to everything in this building, whether it's the roof, the floors, the windows, ADA parking. I'm thinking that there's still money available if we need to, if this is a long-term plan, if we have the political will to do it. And that's what we're talking about now, is political will, not money, because we can find money. We've done it historically. A lot of money comes to this county from the security grant. We pay for the security officers downstairs. A lot of money comes from judicial to this county. There's more money that's coming to judicial security. Hopefully, there's a bill in front of legislatures for another $2 million of courthouse security. That isn't to pay for personnel. That's to pay for equipment and maybe things like secure parking for judges. So I wouldn't let money be the deciding factor on this. I would say let's figure out if we are committed to safety and security for elected officials, we could provide parking for all of you guys, for judges. And if that's the political will is there for that cause, we can figure the money out later. It doesn't have to be 2024, 2025. We could say, okay, it's going to cost us $237,000. Let's figure out where we're going to get that $237,000. Is it part of underfunded? Is it part of courthouse security? Is it part of DOLA? Can we find that money? So my ask today is I think this is a good temporary plan, but if you need to reconcrete that for your ADA folks as well, anyway, let's incorporate that into the master plan and maybe go forward from there. So I don't know, Judge, if you want to say anything. Or
just kind of an FYI, that is part of what we have requested is to concrete the courtyard. That's already part of the grant that we have submitted. And again, you know, we've I've been presenting to the underfunded for 5 years. And thank you for the partnership. And you know, when we all show up as a team, it makes a big difference.
Absolutely.
And we, I personally, I felt the last time that we walked out of there, almost got a week, it's going to be okay. So we like that. And definitely, as Mr. Richard said, this is step one. What comes after is the conversation, right?
Mm-hmm. And if I could clarify a little something for myself to the judge and to the district attorney's office, you brought elected officials. I don't mean to come across as rude or mean or any other reason that I may be coming across here to protect the ADA, which I do have a commitment to. And the purpose, the reason why I say that is because I'm an elected official. I chose to run for this office. I made a commitment to this community to get elected. And whatever dangers come with that, come with it. Same thing with when the judge gets an appointee, you apply for that job for the governor's office or through your committee that appoints you and moves you up the ladder. District attorney runs for these offices. Elected officials run for these offices. We did this by choice. We can have other job choices to do or another career if we chose to do so. A person in a wheelchair has no other option. That's why I'm so...
Well, I feel like that's a personal opinion, not a policy decision. As an elected official, you have a personal opinion about you yourself have applied and taken that risk. But now you're making that personal opinion into a policy decision.
Okay, well, let's put it a policy perspective. There's no statute that says I have to do this.
Well, I don't know
if that's where policy is at. Yeah. Where's show me? And I said this in open session last time. Let's get with our legislator. Let's go to the legislature. Let's make policy and procedure. Let's make a statute that says we need to protect our judges. We need to protect our attorneys. We need to protect our elected officials. But it's not there. So as a board,
we have an opportunity to say, yes, I have a political will to do this, or no, I do not. Whether the money's there. You're using the ADA as an excuse and money as an excuse.
I'm not using an excuse. These people in a wheelchair have no other options to find.
We're not talking about that, Commissioner.
Let me get us back to the issue where we're at. We know that the next steps in the conversation is ongoing, but at this point in time, you know, from the perspective of us pulling up the grant back, we're not going to do that. And the communication again, this, and we know this was going to be a sensitive conversation, but at the end of the day, we have A, what is policy, what is statute, and B, I think you see the goodwill that this group right here has already proposed on the exhibit that you have in front of all of us. So,
right.
If
nobody's yes. talking about taking away ADA parking, and nobody's talking about pulling grants. I just want to
thank you. That thank you so much, Ms. Amato. Judge, do you have a comment?
Commissioners, as somebody who has willed multiple ADA people in and out of this building, I weigh 110 pounds. I have to people park on First Street. Downstairs they call, we go, we get the wheelchair, we go out, get them out of their car, bring them in. I am capable of pushing them up, but some of our staff is not able to get them in and out and down the ramp and all the way back to First. My personal opinion, this would be a wonderful idea. I am somebody who will be telling you what your values are and what funding you're going to be getting here in the next couple of weeks. I understand we are in a budget constraint, but if this is something that we could possibly look into getting done in possibly the next 2 to 3 to 5 years, this would be wonderful because it is far easier to bring somebody that is ADA compliant this direction through these doors than all the way up this 12-mile ramp in on our elevator, down and around the halls. This would be a wonderful addition to what we can provide to our constituents of our county. And we also have to think at any given time, some of our staff has also had to use handicap parking for different reasons. So if we can just continue the communication, but in my opinion, if we could take out some of this retaining wall and make it less burdensome on those that are transporting people in and out, it would be applauded. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, commissioners. Thank you for the opportunity. Clay McKisson, Chief Judge, 3rd Judicial District. I'm not going to rehash conversations we've had about the need or
or lack thereof for security, obviously. And by security, I'm referring to having dedicated parking spots in the courtyard for the judges. I will say, and I've said it before, every one of us as public officials who work in this courthouse should be concerned. You never know who is going to go after you for what reason. As I've said, in the courtroom, in the confines of the courtroom, things become emotional very, very quickly. Judges can be targets, as we saw last week, inside of a courtroom. The takeaway that I had from that was if we have an individual who's brazen enough to try to attack a judge in the courtroom while there's deputies, what would an individual like that do if they had the opportunity catching a judge on the street or anybody else on the street? I greatly appreciate the inclusion in what I'll call the proposal one here regarding the parking area in the courtyard. I highly support Mr. Richard's proposal as well. That makes a lot of sense. I understand the hesitancy there. The point that I wanted to address specifically today was we've got two spots here designated. They've been referred to using and or on the paperwork. It's sheriff's office or judges. I think the phrase and or has been tossed around. These spots need to be dedicated to judges. I don't think that it's appropriate to just have them open. Whoever parks there first, gets the spot. Should be dedicated to judges parking. We've got two judges in this building every day. Sometimes a third that comes down, and I don't include myself there. That's my ask. If this is where things go, again, I appreciate you putting us back in. But I would ask that those become dedicated spots as they have been, and not whoever happens to get there or needs them at that time. So thank you for your consideration. I believe this is workable. I just ask for that dedication to judges specifically. Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, anybody else? Any other comments on this topic? By the way, Mr. Richards, thank you so much. We'll definitely look into. We seem to really enjoy the length of that alleyway. So, anybody else? Otherwise, with no other business on the agenda, commissioners, any other questions, comments? Closing, I will entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Second motion.
Commissioner Hass?
Yes.
Commissioner Reese Lopez?
Yes.
Commissioner Felix Lopez?
Yes.
Well,